Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call of Major Rail Group. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by the zero on your telephone for an operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Insa Kalsö, Executive Vice President, Investor Relations, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Kleinschmidt. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning to everybody calling us from the U.S. today. It is our great pleasure to welcome you all to our management webcast and conference call on the occasion of the release of our final and audited financials for the year 2021, ended December 31, 2021. This is our first release of full-year financials following our private placement and listing of our shares on the Euronext Amsterdam back in September last year. I'm sure that you have all seen our news release as well as our presentation that we posted on our website this morning with the latest information on our fiscal year 2021. Please let me quickly introduce myself to you. I'm Insa Kalsö. I'm responsible for investor relations at Major Rail. Here with me are Thomas Mackenbrock, CEO, and Otmane Serraj, CFSO, who will lead you through the recent developments at Major Rail and our current presentation. Following their presentation, we are open for your questions. If you'd like to ask a question, please follow the operator's instructions. Sorry to be a bore, but our lawyers have asked me to draw your attention to the following. Everything we are saying on this call may contain information that qualified or may have qualified as inside information for the purposes of Article 7 of the Market Abuse Regulation, EU 596/2014. Any oral information given to you during today's call is subject to and governed by our written disclaimer, which is part of our updated investor presentation available to you on our website. This webcast and conference call is intended for capital markets participants only. If there are any media representatives on the call, let me kindly ask you to leave the call right now and get in touch with my colleague, Andrew Slater, who's responsible for media relations at Major Rail and who shall be happy to assist you with any questions. Now, without further ado, my pleasure to hand over to Thomas and to Otmane.
Thank you, Insa, and good morning, everyone, from my side. We're very happy to be with you here today and to report on a very strong 2021 for Major Rail and also to provide a very positive outlook for 2022 for our company. I also hope that you are all safe and well. Let's get started. For 2021, we reached record numbers in all our KPIs, but more importantly, we have continued to be a partner of choice when it comes to world-class customer experience for our clients around the world, and at the same time, continue to be a good home for our almost 70,000 team members. We are also positive for our continued development in 2022. We see strong momentum at the beginning of this year. We further expanded our geographical scope and have deepened our partnership with our clients. In addition, we announced bolt-on acquisitions for geographical expansion and tech and expert services. Hence, our outlook for the year is positive, and we continue to expect double-digit growth for 2022. Unfortunately, we live in troubled times. The really heartbreaking events in Ukraine, but also the continuation of the COVID-19 pandemic, is something that is on top of our minds and hearts. Therefore, I'm extremely proud, and you see here our mission on this page. I'm extremely proud and grateful for really the resiliency and the commitment of our team members around the world. They make the difference every day for our clients and for our customers as well. The resiliency of our team members is the foundation for the resiliency of Major Rail as a whole, as we continue to be a good home for them and continue to be a partner of choice for our 400 clients when it comes to outsourced customer experience services. Let's have a look at the highlights of this year. As you can see on the next page, also during 2021, we have excelled across our three business lines as well as across of our three business segments, as Otmane will provide further details later on. We have grown 31% with a healthy EBITDA margin of 18%. we have also continued to be the unwavering partner for many of the world's major digital and non-digital brands. Pursuing our strategy, we have significantly grew our business with existing clients, as this is reflected here in the net revenue retention of 116%, but at the same time, also won more than 40 new logos, expanded into new geographies, and made strategic acquisition. As we have announced at the beginning of this year and at the end of last year, we have expanded our footprint into Croatia, North Macedonia, and Ghana, and due to the acquisition of Mayan since January 1st, we are also welcoming more than 3,500 people in Turkey to the Majorel family. Naturally, during the ongoing COVID pandemic, the safety, well-being, and development of our team members remained our primary objective. No matter whether they're working on our site or working from home, enabled by our proprietary Majorel Anywhere platform, to support our growth, we have welcomed more than 13,000 team members around the world to Majorel. We also have rolled up our sleeve in every sense and provided vaccination support for them and vaccination support for several public institutions in Europe. And we also have engaged in several important community-focused initiatives worldwide. I remain impressed by the professionalism and team spirit of our colleagues every day. In line with our targets, we have also expanded our digital expansion. As you can see here on the right, 45% of our clients are coming from our global internet verticals, 21% of our net revenue are in the area of content services, trust and safety, and 9% of our net revenue are part of tech and expert services. As you can see on the next page, we see that the organic growth lever of our business are fully intact. We continue to grow with existing clients. We're adding new services, attracting new clients, and investing in new services. And on top of that, we have announced last year 3 add-on acquisitions that further bolster our business. At the same time, and you might have seen the news today, we have also announced a new acquisition as of today with IST Networks that will further strengthen our tech and expert services and expected to be closed at the end of Q2. With this, and if we look at the outlook, and we will go through each of the elements in the next 20 minutes or so, you see that we have the following key highlights. I'm just looking at the page, it's not moving. Key takeaways for today. First, strong financials for 21. Our strategy execution is fully on track when it comes to organic development as well as M&A, and we have a positive outlook for 22 with a 12 to 18% revenue growth if you look at 21 without the COVID-related businesses and a healthy margin of 16 to 70%. With that, I would hand over to my colleague Otman that will guide you through the key results of 21.
Thank you very much, Thomas, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm happy to be with you and share the great results we've seen in 2021 for Majorel. So as you can see on slide 11, we've had a record growth in 2021. As Thomas mentioned, we grew 31% year over year, our net revenue to €1,752 million, slightly above the guidance we had given for 2021. As Thomas mentioned, the growth levers are intact. It's global internet, BFSI, our strategic verticals. We're supported by the growth with our existing clients. So our net revenue retention of 116% allow us to have solid foundations for our growth. We did have some special effects in 2021, as you know. So the COVID-19 business, which is the business we've delivered in 2021, supporting public institutions in their fight against COVID, contributed to €102 million of net revenue in 2021. And we onboarded China in January 2021, and China contributed, in line with our expectations, to €98 million of net revenue. Our like-for-like net revenue growth, excluding this COVID-19 business and the China business, is a solid 16% year-over-year growth. We've also developed our profitability in a very positive way. Our operating EBITDA grew 61% year-over-year to 360 million euro, here again above our guidance, resulting in an 18% operating EBITDA margin, also above the guidance in percentage we had given for operating EBITDA. Our EBIT landed at 105 million euro, which is 6% of our net revenue. But as we mentioned in our prospectus in the different calls, we've had some special effects in connection with the company's private placement and listing in September 2021 in the amount of 128 million euro, which impacted our EBIT negatively. Our group profit for 2021 is 80 million euro, which is 4.6% of our net revenue, resulting in an earning per share of 0.8 euro per share. So there again, of course, this has also been impacted by these special effects. And we guided for the full year on an impact of this IPO-related cost with a tax shield of 25%, which can allow you to adjust these figures when it comes to these special effects. Our cash generation has also been very strong in 2021. Our free cash flow has been 118 million euro, which equates to a cash conversion of 37%. This IPO-related special cost that we had also had a cash effect, a negative cash effect on our free cash flow. Adjusted for these special effects, we would have been at 64% cash conversion rate, which is above the guidance we gave of 51 to 56% of operating EBITDA for our free cash flow. So there again, a very strong performance. Our net cash position is a very solid 79 million euro at the end of 21, to be compared to 141 million euro at year end 2020. The decline, of course, is related to this special IPO-related cost. Last but not least, our economic debt is at 89 million euro versus 4 million euro at the end of 2020. There we had to increase some credit facilities as well as shareholder loans, as I will describe later in the presentation, in order to finance our growth, be it organic growth, CapEx, or inorganic growth with these acquisitions that I mentioned earlier. On the following slide, on slide number 12, you do see this, how the revenue development has how we've executed this revenue development in 2021. While we've been growing 14% year over year from 2019 to 2020, we accelerated to 31% year over year growth from 2020 to 2021, and this is including these two special effects that you see here, the first time inclusion of China with 98 million euro net revenue contribution and the 102 million euro contribution from the COVID-19 business, landing at 1,752 million euro, as I mentioned earlier, is above the guidance we gave for 2021, which was a bracket between 1,700 and 1,750 million euro. On the following slide, slide number 13, you see that our operating EBITDA has also strongly grown from 2020 to 2021. While we grew 53% year over year from 2019 to 2020, increasing our margins from 10.9% to 14.6% operating EBITDA margin in 2020, we even went further with a jump to 18% operating EBITDA margin in 2021, which is a 61% increase from 196 million euro operating EBITDA in 2020 to 316 million euro in 2021. And this includes 15 million euro contribution from the China business, as well as the contribution of the COVID-19 business, where we already mentioned that the margins were roughly double the margins of the rest of the business. And the 316 million euro operating EBITDA margin in 2021 is above the guidance we had given of 290 to 310 million euro for the full year. So let's have a look at how we the breakdown of our growth year over year on slide number 14. So we grew from 1,340 million euro to 1,752 million euro thanks to a very solid like-for-like net revenue growth, i.e. growth excluding the China business and the COVID-19 business, of 212 million euro, which is a 16% like-for-like net revenue growth. This is a solid growth. In our previous earnings announcement, we already commented on 18% like-for-like growth half year 21 and 17% for the first 9 months. So as you see, we have some normalization of our top line growth, but we're still at plus 16% year over year net revenue growth like for like. Every segment contributed to this major growth. EASA, Europe, Africa, South America grew 19% year over year and contributed an incremental 204 million euro to the overall growth. Part of that is coming from this COVID-19 business. So half of it, 102 million euro, are coming from the COVID-19 business, as this this is the only segment where we've had contribution from COVID-19 business. GEMS grew 44% year over year. So still a very sustained and high level of growth for GEMS. We'll see later how this has been has developed over Q4. It's 110 million euro year over year, 110 million euro incremental growth coming from the GEMS segment. And SEA, China and East Asia contributed 98 million euro, as I mentioned. We have no reference for 2020 as we included China in the major scope in January 2021. This results in an overall growth of 31% year over year for Majorel. Let's now have a deep dive on EASA on slide number 16. So there you see that this 19% top line growth that I mentioned from 1,086 million euro to 1,290 million euro, if you adjust this growth for the COVID-19 business, we still have a very healthy growth at 9% year over year, like for like. And Q4 has been growing also very strongly, 12% year over year from Q4 2020 to Q4 2021, and adjusted for this remaining COVID-19 business that we had in Q4, it's 6% like-for-like net revenue growth. The growth drivers there are mainly the growth with the strategic verticals, global internet and BFSI clients. We grew our offshore locations in EASA, mainly in Africa, Eastern Europe, and Latin America. And as I mentioned, the COVID-19 business accounted for in this segment specifically. When we look at GEMS, so there is really pure like-for-like and organic growth, 44% year over year. And Q4, we grew at 40% year over year, which is in line with the previous levels of growth we've announced half year and for Q3 to date. So there, the exposure to global internet clients is higher in GEMS, and therefore this very strong growth that we've seen with global internet players above 50% year over year is strongly contributing to the development of GEMS. The drivers there are the strong net increase, that the net revenue increase that we've seen, particularly in the Philippines, in Canada, the US, Egypt, Malaysia, India, and Kenya, this recently country we added in the footprint and where we're having a very strong growth. Finally, on SEA, on slide number 18, so there you see the 98 million euro contribution in 2021 with an operating EBITDA margin of 15.4%, which is in line with our expectations. So we, as I mentioned, we don't have any reference for 2020, but we've seen some nice sequential growth from Q3 to Q4 for China above 10%, and we're happy that China is indeed contributing in line with our guidance of 5 to 7% of our net revenue. So there we're expanding the footprint in China, especially outside of the large tier one cities, and we're expanding the nice digital consumer engagement platform we have in China, and we have a specific focus in China on consumer products and digital clients, which contributed to our revenue expansion and profitability in SEA. On slide number 19, there you see the breakdown of our EBITDA contribution from the different segments. So there, as I mentioned, each of the segments has not only contributed to the top line developments, but also to the growth of our operating EBITDA from 14.6% to 18%. EASA has generated 70 million euro incremental operating EBITDA with a nice contribution from this COVID-19 business. GEMS has contributed 31 million euro operating EBITDA, and SEA, as also already mentioned, contributed 15 million euro operating EBITDA to the overall major web scope. On slide number 20, let's have a look to the EBIT and group profit developments that we've had. As I mentioned, and I will really insist on this comment in the bottom of the slide, we really had this special effects in connection with the company's private placement and listing negatively impacting our EBIT and our group profits. The overall amount was 128 million euro. It had an impact both on EBIT and group profit. And there, as a reminder, we guided towards a tax shield of 25% for these special effects. So on the EBIT level, we see a decline from 116 million euro on 2020 to 105 million euro in 2021, down from 8.7% to 6%. But as you can see, from 2019 to 2020-21, we've seen a very strong development of our level of EBIT, including the special effects of this IPO-related costs. From a group profit perspective, then again, a strong growth from 2019 to 2020-21, from 1.4% to 4.6%, and of course in 2021, there again, we had this negative effect of the IPO-related costs. Our level of free cash flow on slide number 21 is still very strong. Our cash conversion rate, as I mentioned, is at 37% in 2021 compared to 77% in 2020. And there, adjusted for this special IPO-related cost and their cash impact in 2021, we would have been at 64% cash conversion rate above the target corridor of 51 to 56%. As you can see here, and this is the free cash flow definition as we've already shared in our half year and Q3 results based on the Bertelsmann definition, which is the controlling and consolidating shareholder. But as you can see here, our CapEx level is in line with the guidance that we gave at 61 million euro, which equates to 3.5% of our net revenue. And the payment of from leases are also increasing in line with the growth that we have. But all in all, we land at 118 million euro free cash flow, which is a solid level, including all the special effects in connection with the company's private placement in September 21. Our balance sheet is still very strong, as you can see on slide number 22. Our level of cash increased significantly from 2020 to 21, from 195 million euro at the end of 2020 to to 238 million euro at the end of 2021. We increased our liabilities to banks, as I mentioned. Actually, we reimbursed a 30 million loan that we had in connection to the COVID-19 pandemic. And then we increased our credit facilities with the banks to above 70 million euro in preparation of the growth and some M&A operations that we had. We also increased our shareholder loans from 20 million euro to 85 million euro. There again, a strong trust from our shareholders to allow us to develop our business and grow our business organically as well as inorganically. This results in a net cash position of 79 million euro at the end of 2021. Our provisions for pensions and similar decreased to 43 million euro, and our lease liabilities, of course, in line with the growth and the integration of China, increased to 125 million euro. This leads to an economic debt of 89 million euro to be compared to the 4 million euro we had at the end of 2020. So we still have a very low leverage. We still have a very strong balance sheet allowing us to execute the future M&A roadmap that we want to execute over the coming years. On slide number 23, it's a recap of our full P&L view down to our free cash flow. So there you see the top line revenue growing 31% and the operating EBITDA growing 61%. And of course, from an EBIT, group profit, free cash flow perspective, the declines you see here are related to the special effects of these IPO-related costs. We guided in our different calls towards some financial specific financial KPIs, and I wanted to just reconfirm that we're in line, perfectly in line with our midterm target on these different guidelines for 2021. Our right of use depreciation, where we guided towards a level just below 3% of our net revenue, is at 45 million euro at 2.6% of our net revenue. Our financial result decreased to minus 5 million euro. So this is this has been made possible thanks to some reimbursement of credit facilities that we made, allowing us to have a very good level of cash management across 2021, and of course reduce the financial result impact on our P&L. Our effective tax rate for 2021 is below the range that we guided towards, 22 to 24%. It's actually at 20% of EBT at minus 20 million euro level of tax charges. So this is below the range that we guided towards. And there again, as you might guess, we've had an impact of this 128 million euro cost related to the IPO of Majorel. There again, if you adjust for this 128 million euro impact, we would be perfectly in the range of 22 to 24% effective tax rate. From a CapEx perspective, as I mentioned earlier, we're at 3.5% of net revenue in line with our guidance. And if you exclude the special COVID-19 related business, we would be at 3.7%. So then again, at the midpoint of our range. Our net working capital has also been impacted by this IPO-related cost because the cash impact of this 120 million euro is roughly spread two-thirds in 2021 and one-third in 2022, as we had some payouts earlier this year in 2022. And we are at 1.8% of net revenue, 31 million euro net working capital. From a free cash flow perspective, as I already mentioned, 180 million euro, 37% of operating EBITDA, adjusted for the IPO, special IPO costs, we would have been at 64%. And our dividend policy remains intact at 30 to 50% of group profit, but this will be proposed at the AGM on June 20, 2021. Thomas, back to you.
Thanks, Otman. Thanks for the overview. And before we go into the outlook section, just a quick recap on our business highlights and our strategy. So as you know, we are a tech-enabled global customer experience company. We combine human talent, deep domain expertise and process know-how with data and technology. So we manage large and complex services for our clients at scale. And we do this really with a clear focus along these three business lines. Our focus is end-to-end customer experience, encompassing customer interaction services, back office related business process service, and supplementary tech and expert services. We do this for our two strong client verticals, our client pillars. Pillar number one, digital born companies with global scale. We want to be their global partner of choice when it comes to customer interaction services, as well as content services, trust and safety. Our second pillar are vertical leaders in industries that are reaching out more directly to the end customers in the banking space, in the insurance space, in the consumer product space, in the automotive space. And there again, we want to be their guide, their enabler, their support, their long-term partner on enabling highly enriched customer experience solution on the front end as well as on the end and to really holistically drive customer experience. Tech and expert services, we have provided the guidance that we see this as also one of our speed boats of growth and further accelerate in this area. The recently or today announced acquisition of IST falls directly in our strategy as we want to help to navigate our client the more complex digital customer experience world with CX expertise as well as CX technology, and IST Networks fits directly in that category as it allows to, with a highly skilled team of more than 200 IT specialists that help implement CX technologies for leading companies in the Middle East. One last comment here. I think what was a particularly important element during the last 2 years and also in 21 is our Majorel Anywhere Hub, Anywhere platform. This is a digital hybrid workplace that allows us to empower and enable our almost 70,000 team members around the world to be productive in a secure, safe, and convenient environment working from home as well as working on site. And I'm really proud what our teams have developed here over the last 2 years. When you look on the next page, when it comes to global delivery and why we believe this is so critically important, we are one, in our opinion, few global, truly global companies that have a platform spanning from east to west with operations at scale in China, Philippines, Malaysia, and India, as well as being in a very strong and leading position in EMEA and a presence in the Americas. And we want to hone and expand our global delivery platform further. We have invested over the last years significantly expanding our global reach, and particularly in near and offshore location, and will do so in the future, where we provided a guidance that we want to expand from currently 35 countries to 40 countries in the midterm. When you look at the client distribution and industry verticals, it's right in line with our strategic directive. We have a client distribution that is more or less similar than the last 2 years that we want to expand and grow across our entire portfolio, with small, medium-sized, and large clients. And we have further focused our industry verticals in the two verticals, Global Internet and BFSI, that together are almost 60% of our revenue now. When we take a last look at our strategic KPIs on the next page, you can see also we made significant progress along all five dimensions, exactly as we have provided guidance in our last calls, increasing the share of global internet to our midterm guided over 50%, further reduction of our telco exposure, where we're getting closer to 10%, increasing our offshore delivery, which is now getting closer to 40%, 39% in 21, and of course, our product mix for content services, trust and safety, and tech and expert services, as we explained below. So really proud on the entire team in terms of executing the strategy. Our focus is really execution, operational excellence, and further honing our competitive advantage, because with this focus, we see further potential along these dimensions. Back to you, Otmane, with the outlook for this year.
Sure. Thanks, Thomas. So this makes us very confident in the outlook that we're going to share with you. So for 2022, the guidance that we have for the net revenue is a bracket of 1.85 billion-1.95 billion, which if we take the reference of 2021, excluding the COVID-19 business, as we've always been guiding towards in our previous call, equates to a growth of 12% to 18% year-over-year from 2021 to  2022. And our midterm guidance remains intact with the growth of our net revenue in the low teens midterm. Our guidance for our operating EBITDA for 2022 is a bracket of 16% to 17% of operating EBITDA margin for 2022. Here you see the guidance we had given from 2020 to 2022, where we had expected the cumulative operating EBITDA margin expansion 2020, 2022 above the annual midterm target of 30 to 50 basis points per annum. And as you can see here, we're far stronger in terms of outlook because this bracket of 16 to 17% operating EBITDA margin would lead to a margin expansion from 2020 to 2022 between 140 and 240 basis points. Going forward, our midterm guidance remains intact with a growth of 30 to 50 basis points per annum for our operating EBITDA, driven by the different levers of growth that we've had, we mentioned, i.e. development of our offshore presence, development of tech and expert services, value-added and more complex services, growth with our strategic verticals, and active portfolio management. Back to you, Thomas.
Thanks, Otmane. I'm just looking at the time and I'm seeing we just have 20 minutes left for Q&A, so I will be brief with the key takeaways from that. I think you have seen the numbers 21, and we can be really proud of it, the entire organization, but the year is over. We have to now focus on 22. We really had a good start into the year, and that is also reflected in the guidance that Otmane has just provided. And what is really more important than last year's numbers is that our strategy and operations is intact. The key fundamental drivers of our business, the key levers that we are focusing on, is also what we continue to focus on in 22, which makes us positive that despite the uncertainties that we currently see in the world economy, despite the crisis in the Ukraine, we are confident in our outlook for this year as presented today. With that, back to you, Inza, and please open the floor for Q&A.
Yes, I think the first question will come from Oscar Valmas.
Yes, good afternoon, Thomas and Otmane.
Hi, Oscar.
Hopefully you can hear me well.
Yep,
I have two questions. I will take them one by one. The first one is on booking.com, just some more color. So I guess the first part of that question is, it seems like it's new outsourcing, but could you confirm if there's any, I guess, cash outflow or if it was a competitive process or not? And the second part of that question is, could you give a sense of the timing of that transaction? When do you think it will complete and the size of the contribution, either in revenue terms or in terms of employees or how big that customer becomes? That's the first question.
Sure. Thanks, Oscar. So a couple of points on this. As we also announced in our press release, the closing of this agreement, of this partnership, is still subject to customary closing condition and workers' council consultation. We currently expect that this will be at the end of Q2, but we don't confirm at this point in time a final date. And depending on the closer, that has also an impact, of course, in terms of a magnitude of the effects for this year. We haven't disclosed also in agreement with our client any details of the agreement as of now, but when we close before the end of Q2, you will obviously see in our half-year numbers the respective data that is required under IFRS 16. And to your question with regards to impact, yes, in our guidance, we included the estimation of the expanded partnership with Booking. As it's important to know, it's an expansion of an existing partnership, as we outlined before. So we do already have Booking as a client, as it was outlined in the press release, and we are expanding the portfolio and the scope of service with them through this agreement.
Okay, great. The second question is around the 16 to 17% margin. Could you just give what the upside and downside scenarios are? What are you worried about in terms of for this year, and what could the upside be in downside case to that range?
Yes. So the way we build the guidance, we indeed took into account some trends that we've already been seeing, you know, when we shared our Q3 results. So first of all, the declining COVID-19 business. So we, at the end of Q3, we were expecting this to, go down till the end of Q4. So obviously, with the developments of the pandemic, we do have a contribution of this COVID-19 business in 2022, and of course, the corresponding margin contribution. But of course, as we see today and in the current context, we don't see this COVID-19 business having an impact on the entire year 2022. The second thing that we mentioned is the back to site, return to site process that we're seeing. So we're roughly still at the same level of work from home, you know, as of December 31st, as Thomas already mentioned. And there again, of course, with our customers asking us to bring our people back to site, also with the better environment in terms of health and safety that we start to see in countries across the globe, this will have a negative impact on our margins. Both effects are, of course, factored in the guidance that we gave. But as Thomas mentioned, we still have a way to go to get to the guidance in terms of the strategic KPIs, be it the offshore mix, the global internet mix, the development of tech and expert services. So we'll still have strong contribution of these elements to our overall operating EBITDA margin. And this also has been factored in the 16 to 17% operating EBITDA margin guidance for 22.
If I add one point, obviously, as we also highlight in the press release, that we are closely monitoring the Ukraine crisis and the listening events there that also do expect, I mean, that's hard to predict the effect on the world economy and the macroeconomic effect. We have taken, based on our best knowledge, client by client, an estimate for the year that is factored in our guidance, which essentially from the order of magnitude in revenue offsets the COVID-related businesses that we see for this year.
Thanks, Thomas. And the final one is just on wage inflation. Can you remind us, what risk you have on contracts, or how do you adjust for prices in your contracts?
I mean, this question indeed we already discussed in half year and Q3. So as mentioned before, most of our contracts include price indexation or price negotiation clauses, be it indexation on existing official indexes like in what we have in Europe on CPI indexes in Europe, or negotiation clauses when it comes to the pricing with our customers. And this, I mean, allows us to pass through to have the direct impact of all the wage inflation that we might see in the different countries on the prices that we're applying for our customers. It's, of course, a negotiation. It's, of course, the objective is, of course, to make sure that we do operate in the in optimal conditions, and we have levers of locating the operations where we allow this win-win situation to happen. So either we manage to align and agree on a proper pricing, especially in onshore destinations, either we can push the volumes to offshore destinations where we have less pressure on the labor market.
If I may add one more strategic view there, having a truly global delivery platform for a service provider like us, which is a completely virtual and digital product, is absolutely fundamental because we can tap in for our clients in different labor markets at the right location, at the right price. And in this setup, in a world that sees labor scarcity and wage inflation, is really, I think, a strategic advantage that we can bring to many of our clients.
Okay, great. For all your questions, thank you both.
Oscar? Okay, perfect. All right.
Yes,
next question
yes.
comes from Zoazini from Goldman Sachs.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. Maybe I wanted to ask the question on outlook in reverse, actually. If you think about the guidance range, it's a range of around 100 million. What are the key assumptions that will help you hit the lower end of the range and upper end of the range? Is it just the timing on the booking.com contract, maybe? And there is a lot of talk about inflation, and it's very clear you do have inflation in the indexation in your contracts. Does higher than average or higher than expected inflation indexation, did that drive any of the guidance increase in 2022? That's under one. And just one generally, your pipeline on for contracts, customer contracts, does appear very, very strong. So does your revenue guidance just include mainly the contracts that have been signed so far, and does maybe new contract wins potentially offer upside risks to this guidance? Thank you.
So maybe to answer your first question in terms of what drives the guidance range on the lower end or the upper end in this certain timing. So as we are also now at the beginning of the year, we wanted to provide a prudent outlook for the year, taking into account what we currently see. One factor is obviously the development of our pipeline, where we feel quite strongly. We have really a good discussion with many of our existing clients, but also new clients that we bring on board. And as I said, the 40 new logos that we won last year is not an effect that you see immediately, but it's about building up this relationship also in this year to build a continuous momentum with this client in the next month. On top of that, obviously, effects like how relevant or what are the effects of the macroeconomic effects of the Ukraine crisis on the global economy? What about the COVID situation in China? What about remnant COVID businesses in Europe have an impact on our guidance up and down? I think that we provided a prudent corridor, which I think from our point of view, from management point of view, will give the investors a good opportunity to see how resilient the business is. And in terms of over-index on inflation index on the prices, maybe over also to you.
Yeah, maybe Swazini, just to clarify how we built the outlook. It's really a bottom-up process that we're doing, client by client, site by site, country by country. And as you might guess, we're closely monitoring impacts of wage inflation on the different countries. So by building this outlook, taking into account the outlook that we see for the year, in terms of wage inflation, and indeed we do see some higher impacts in some of the countries. We then put together all the bottom-up inputs that we had to build this guidance. So at the end of the day, yes, depending on the countries and the inflation that we see in these countries, you would see some impact on the guidance, but that's factored overall in the 16 to 17% that we provide.
Thank you very much. If you don't mind, I just have one quick follow-up, please, on the booking.com contract. After that contract ramps up fully, on a pro forma basis, does it change your client concentration generally? Does it become a top five client? Was it already a top five client? Thank you.
So it's a little bit speculative how our client concentration would look like for 22. So I'm happy to announce this and publish this number to you next March. But I think it's fair to assume that Booking has not been a top 10 client in our numbers for 21. So
thank
it is a client,
much.
As you see in our press release, for the last 7 years, top of my mind, but it hasn't been a top 10 client last year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zoazini. The next question comes from Nicole Magnon, UBS. Please go ahead, Nicole.
Good afternoon, everyone. Two questions for me, please, both about your growth. Firstly, on 2021, you've reported the 16% like-for-like and then also the 116% net revenue retention, which obviously looks like a very strong performance with existing clients, then you did also sign the 40 new logos in the year. So maybe can you just help us understand that balance? I guess it's, you know, around what you said about new clients being initially quite small, so they don't contribute much to growth. So maybe if you can clarify that and the outlook for those new clients in 2022 and how much they'll contribute then.
So as you said, in our business, it takes time to develop a client because typically you start in one business line in one country and you ramp up, you need to train people, you need to get on board the processes, and then you slowly ramp up the business. So the new logos wins that we had last year, if we're ramping up them next year and hopefully scale some of them in 22 even further, it will become an existing client in our 22 numbers, no? As we always look at net revenue retention compared to the same cohort of clients in the prior year. So building a portfolio of new logos, some of them, to be honest, also startups where we do have hopes, but for all of them, but from some of them to really see some quite significant growth over the next year. But it's a portfolio also of smaller companies that we then hope to develop in the following years and not just immediately in the next year. But again, it's about planting the seed to reach our guidance, as Osman said, essentially to grow a double digit on a continuous basis, which would be roughly two times the market growth.
Great, thank you. Maybe just one very quick follow-up. Could you comment at all on end customer volumes and any signs of slowdown? I know that internet client segment is very important for you, and some of the internet companies and e-commerce companies have been reporting some growth slowing off highs. So any kind of additional comment you can give there would be great.
So as Otman said, we really try to, our business is not one single answer. No, we have 400 clients and the reality and the demand volume for each client is very different. To be honest, this was also the case in 2019, in 2020, in 2021. We see a massive drop, for instance, for travel companies in 2020 and some recuperation the following year. So we do have different economic developments for each client. And as we look at it bottom up, client by client, this is reflected on also in our guidance projection, our outlook for this year. So yes, as Otman said, there will be some normalization to some of the growth we've seen last year, but that's why also the guidance is where it is, which is still a very strong growth based on the assumptions that we have taken now bottom up.
Great, thank you.
As a reminder, if you want to ask a question, please press 0 and 1.
So do we have other questions, anything?
No, for the time being, we have no other questions, but please go ahead. You know, if you have any other question for Thomas and Fortman, now please. I see Laurent has a question. I'm not surprised, Laurent. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I would have two questions for Otman, actually. The first one regards the cash tax spending you get in 2022. It doubled versus last year.
Can you speak up a bit, please, Laurent? Sorry, hard to understand.
So the first question relates to your cash tax spending in your cash flow statement, which was 40 million euros in 2021, so the double of last year. Could you give us an explanation for this sharp increase? And the second question is relates to your D&A. Could you give us the split between IFRS 16 depreciation and the rest? And the last one regarding your acquisition this morning, could you give us some data points, potential top line, etc. for modeling?
Okay, so on the cash tax. So as you see, our overall level of cash of tax expenses have been roughly stable from 21 to in 2020 and in 21, roughly around 20 million euro. So we did have some special effects in relation to the M&A operations that we've had, as well as some effects related to the deferred tax assets that we had. So our overall effective tax rates significantly declined from 2019 to 2020 and then 21, but we indeed have some up and down effects coming from M&A operations and associated cash tax impacts, as well as deferred tax assets. On the IFRS 16 impact, I think in the guidance, Laurent, we gave a view on the level of or the impact of the right of use depreciation. You see that on slide number 24. And you see at the same time the overall level of D&A, the breakdown of the D&A at 85 million euro. So this allows you to compute the difference and see the IFRS 16 impact. And on the IST acquisition, I will hand over to Thomas.
Sure. So as we said, we want to strengthen our tech and expert services through a ideally series of bolt-on acquisition. IST is one of those bolt-on. I think it's really a cornerstone when it comes to CX technology implementation in the Middle East, with a very qualified team of more than 200 technical engineers and solution consultants. And we do have some lead opportunities to further expand this also to our EMEA client base. In terms of revenue contribution for this year, we do expect a closing by the end of also Q2, but the revenue impact for this year will be very marginal. It will be around 1%, not more than that, Doron.
Thank you.
And we have one follow-up question from Oscar.
Yes, it's me again. I have a question that's quite an important topic with investors. I appreciate you can probably only answer part of it, but can you give a sense of, in your conversations being part of the board with the anchor shareholders, what's the comment on visibility of long-term ownership and what their strategy is for Majorel?
So,
given it's been impacting liquidity.
No, absolutely. And as you're well aware, this is a topic that often surfaces in our discussion with all our shareholders. It's something that we also actively discuss in the board with our existing anchor shareholders. I think that the topic of liquidity is something that is really top of their mind, and both Bertelsmann and Saham have really the best interests of Majorel in mind. Of course, I cannot speak directly on their behalf, but based on our discussion, I think it's fair to say that any potential secondary placement of additional Majorel shares, now that would help additional liquidity, will be at the end driven by valuation, market condition, and really also the objective of enhancing the stock's capital market profile and trading liquidity. So it's really top of their mind. They're very aware of that it could has a relevant impact, but it really depends on these factors whether this will be increased or not.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions?
I see there are no other questions, so please, if you have another question, please go ahead now. Okay, there are no more questions. So as usual, please go ahead. You know, if you have any follow-up questions, comments, remarks or something, reach out to me. And please allow me one final remark before we all switch off from this phone call. You know that we have our Capital Markets Day, the first Capital Markets Day after our private placement last September, planned for June in Barcelona. And we would very highly appreciate if you were to come and if you were to follow our invitation. You will receive the official invitation during course of next week, and it would be great to see you there. So thank you very much indeed for your interest, and with that, we would close this conference call for this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.